The introductory paragraph of every edition of Charlottesville Community Engagement is intended to be a script for a podcast, but recently there has been a disturbance in the workforce. Efforts are being made to build a new framework, and the arrival of steel beams this week to the construction site at Buford Middle School has prompted me to finally take this next step. I'm Sean Tubbs, and I miss the podcast, too. On today's podcast edition for April 20th, 2024, Charlottesville City Council adopts a budget that reflects a move toward unionization of the city's workforce and other factors. There's a problem with excessive dog waste being left at the city's newest park. Charlottesville's Parks and Recreation officials want your input on the next master plan to guide the future of public spaces in the city. The city has a plan to fix drainage issues in Oakwood Cemetery. Albemarle and Charlottesville both need more lifeguards. The city's planning commission gets an update on the new development code. Albemarle supervisors have comments on recent deployment of the HEART team. And the Albemarle Department of Social Services helps a lot of people each year. And supervisors get a briefing on the latest in the comprehensive plan update. In today's first subscriber-supported shout-out, the Charlottesville Area Alliance is an organization created in 2015 that is made up of several groups that seek to make the community the most age-friendly community in the country. Toward that goal, they've begun a series of free webinars on resources on local support and services available to seniors, caregivers of those with long-term illness, and those needing care. On April 25th, the Jefferson Area Board for Aging, most commonly called JABA, will give a presentation on what they have to offer to the community. There is a link in the newsletter version to a registration button you can click to watch that and participate on Zoom. Thank you to the Charlottesville Area Alliance for that shout out. You may have noticed no new podcast for the last couple of weeks, but there were a lot of newsletters. There are many reasons for this. I now do a radio show on WTJU that gets vetted by a professional audio engineer, and he saw some flaws in the process that I've been using that needed to be addressed. I had been using a lot of filters, and that meant I wasn't producing the best version sonically. The microphone I've been using for nearly 4 years broke during a recent trip, and I struggled to find the time to come up with a new setup, a struggle that took until time on a Saturday morning to address. And the studio computer I've been using for nearly 4 years developed a glitch that was garbling my narration, a glitch I've still not resolved, forcing me to adopt a temporary backup plan and maybe to just move on from that studio computer for now. It took about 6 hours today to produce this, but that time also involves making sure each story is also posted to infoseville.com. That's the archive site known as Information Charlottesville. I write about 24 stories a week, and dropping the podcast for each newsletter has freed up time to get the print version out to thousands of people much quicker. Thank you for your patience, podcast listener, because I know there are paid subscribers who expect podcasts. So they're going to continue to happen, but they will change as I continue learning to balance all of this. Now, on with the show. Charlottesville City Council voted Monday 4-0 to adopt a $253 million general fund budget based on revenues powered by an increase in all four of the taxes under control of locally elected officials. Council adopted the budget after a public hearing on a 20-cent increase in the personal property tax rate that was not included as part of the budget recommended by City Manager Sam Sanders in early March. Councilor Natalie Oshman raised the idea on April 1st to signal the city's desire to deprioritize automobile usage. No one spoke about the public hearing required for the tax rate increase. The legally mandated hearings had already been held for the 2-cent increase in the real estate tax, the 1% increase in the lodging tax rate, and the 0.5% increase in the meals tax. The latter had been anticipated to be at a full percentage point increase, but was lowered due to a combination of around $600,000 in additional personal property tax revenue, as well as revenue adjustments upward. Though no one spoke at the official public hearing, one person did make a comment at the regular public comment period. For many years, Downing Smith appeared frequently and returned on Monday to weigh in on one of those taxes.
My property taxes have gone up 50% in the last 5 years. They're going to go up 10% more this year, 60. So in 10 years, that means my real property taxes will have doubled. Y'all talk about sustainable housing, affordable housing. You aren't going to get any affordable housing if you keep driving up interest rates at these rates. The only people who are going to be able to afford homes are the very rich and developers.
Smith said the city could reduce the budget by not giving money to nonprofit agencies. Much of the conversation at an April 4th work session on the budget centered on using a portion of the personal property tax revenue to directly invest in improving the public transit system that is owned and operated by the city of Charlottesville. Chrissy Hamill is the city's budget director.
The amount that is going to transit is $601,681. We put it as a service capacity increase for transit, reserved for drivers.
That's enough for 8 drivers, and City Councilor Michael Payne suggested any additional revenue that ends up in a surplus go to continue to hire more people to operate Charlottesville area transit vehicles.
We've just got to get to 11 just to meet pre-pandemic service. We said coming into this budget cycle, transit was top and ended up falling out, so we didn't get there.
Payne also said council is making a mistake, increasing the personal property tax rate and the meals tax rate, and should instead rely on the real property tax rate to pay for their priorities and expanding relief programs. After the budget was adopted, Hamill made a comment that embodies a move to a year-round budget cycle.
Getting ready to start on the next one.
Mayor Juan Diego Wade was absent due to a death in his family. Keep checking Charlottesville Community Engagement and Information Charlottesville, that's infoseville.com, for coverage dedicated to how the city spends its money. To get a sense of it all, check out the archives on infoseville.com. The opening minutes of the Charlottesville Planning Commission are a great way to find information out about all sorts of things that might be happening in the community. That was certainly the case on April 9th, 2024. Hosea Mitchell is a member of the Charlottesville Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee, in addition to being the chair of the Planning Commission. He discussed something that the group discussed in March. Back then, they discussed issues that have sprung up at Jenkins Park, a smaller space recently constructed on city-owned land in the 10th and Page neighborhood.
The precipitating event was just a lot of dog waste in the park.
The website for Jenkins Park, on the city's website, lists 2 amenities, benches and open space. Mitchell said the idea is for it to be a passive park for area residents to relax in, including those in West Haven.
Well, the residents think that they're having a difficult time relaxing there because the poop makes it uncomfortable and, to some degree, unsafe for the kids.
According to materials presented in March, Jenkins Park is 0.4 acres large. There are 2 chess and checkerboards, a trash can, and a dog waste station. The park is also built at the nexus of several stormwater lines, and there's concern that bacteria in the dog waste will go straight into the watershed. Mitchell said the issue is prompting further discussion about revisiting the ordinance related to dogs in parks, as well as planning for additional dog parks. At Jenkins Park, the city is planning on adding more to the park, including 2 picnic tables and a structure to provide shade. They'll also install additional trash cans, as well as signage informing people about harm to the environment when dog waste is left on the ground. At the moment, Charlottesville is in the midst of the public input process for a new master plan to guide the future of the city's Parks and Recreation Department. Master plans are a chance to determine what new amenities will be built and whether new facilities are needed. Here's a section from a press release that went out announcing people of 4 meetings that are happening in the coming weeks.
The purpose of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan is to guide the city of Charlottesville for the next 10 years and provide strategic direction and vision to meet current and emerging public needs, as well as remain the primary steward of the significant natural, cultural, and historic resources.
If you're interested in getting involved and offering your input in person, there are four upcoming events. The first is on Sunday, April 21st, from 3 to 5 p.m. at Crow Recreation Center at 1700 Rose Hill Drive. The links to the other ones are available in the newsletter and at infoseville.com. Each of these events is intended to have other activities for friends and family who might not be as interested in the promulgation of public policy. Here's more from that website.
Each event will feature a fun-filled afternoon with games and activities, music, bounce houses, food, raffles, and more.
The city has hired the firm Pros Consulting to do the work. I reported on that last November. There's a link in the newsletter. The City of Charlottesville Parks and Recreation Department also maintains Oakwood Cemetery. That's one of two graveyards run by the City of Charlottesville. Anytime it rains of a sufficient quantity, standing water begins to rise in the southeast corner of Oakwood Cemetery. The city hired the firm Line and Grade last December to investigate and are currently considering some mitigation. Here's a press release from the city.
The forensic investigation concluded that the low-lying wet conditions were the result of multiple hydrologic and hydraulic factors related to the development history at Oakwood Cemetery.
Here's Hosea Mitchell again. He sits on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee. He also gave an update to the City's Planning Commission on April 9th.
There is, or at least used to be, a little stream that ran through or around the park. And we believe that the drain that we built to manage that stream is broken.
Mitchell said the city is consulting with engineers to solve the issue, but any work performed must respect the grave sites. The public can find out more information at a meeting to be held on April 24 at 6 p.m. in City Space. One more thing from the Parks and Recreation Department. Since the pandemic, labor shortages have made it difficult for many industries to get back to full capacity. That's especially applied to aquatics and the need to fully staff pools with people who can provide assistance to those who are having trouble swimming. That's a problem again in Charlottesville, according to Planning Commissioner Hosea Mitchell, who sits on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board.
We're worried that we may not be able to be open full-time, all the pools open full-time during the coming season.
Ryan Anthony, the city's interim Parks and Recreation Director, said in an email that he is hoping to recruit between 15 and 20 additional lifeguards. Mitchell said recruitment efforts are underway. According to the city's jobs page, there are two classifications for lifeguard, and one at the higher level can make up to $40,560 a year if they work as a lifeguard full-time. Albemarle County is also seeking lifeguards for their beaches and offer a bonus of up to $550. They'll also help cover the cost to become certified. They sent out a notice earlier this month saying that they need help at Chris Green, Mint Springs, and Walnut Creek Lake Parks. In Albemarle, pay for starting lifeguards begins at $16 an hour, and head lifeguards get $18 an hour. Finally, from the Planning Commission, Charlottesville's new development code has been in effect for 2 months, and so far there have been no applications for major developments. Staff in the Department of Neighborhood Development Services continue to process a handful of applications submitted under the old rules. The City Planning Commission met frequently in late 2023 to make their recommendations to the new rules, which significantly increase the development rights of most properties across the city's 10.4 square miles. However, they've not had a single work session in 2024. Missy Creasy is the Deputy Director at NDS.
We're kind of slowly working ourselves back into that because we were meeting once and twice a week for a number of months.
Creasy said that the planning team has been working with developers in pre-application meetings for future projects that will be built under the new rules.
We've definitely found some things that we need to work on to try and see if we can get to
projects to fruition, but it's been very fruitful.
Creasy said there are currently no plans for any projects to come before the Planning Commission in the next few months. There will be a public hearing on May 14th on recommendations on how to spend the city's allocation of community development block grant funding. On April 9th, the Planning Commission reviewed the design of Verve Charlottesville as the Entrance Corridor Review Board. Creasy's boss at the NDS department is James Freese, who has recently been promoted to be the Deputy City Manager for Operations.
I will remain as Interim Director of NDS until we fill that position, and that position has been advertised.
Starting salary for the Director of NDS begins at $130,000 a year and pays up to $174,720 annually. Freese said there would also be a new position of Planning Manager that will soon be advertised. One task for that new position will be to revamp the way staff approaches the development review process under the new rules. And that's it for Charlottesville for this edition. After the break, we're going to turn to Albemarle County. You're listening to Charlottesville Community Engagement. And in today's first Patreon-fueled shout-out, Livable Seaville and Central Virginia Community Justice are holding a webinar on April 23rd, 2024 that offers a glimpse into alternate ways to deal with collisions between motorists and other users of the roads. The event will feature Aaron Campbell, co-director of Central VA Community Justice, and Shannon Neal, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney for Albemarle County, as they talk about one recent case. Also on the panel are the survivor and the driver of that local hit-and-run case who had the option of taking the restorative justice option. There will also be questions and answers. You can register at a link in the newsletter on Eventbrite. Thank you to Livable Seaville and the Central Virginia Community Justice for this shout-out. A member of the Albemarle Board of Supervisors took some time at Wednesday's meeting to acknowledge the role a new public safety team is playing in the community. On April 10, 2024, Albemarle's new Human Services Alternative Response Team, or HART, responded to an incident in the 700 block of Belvedere Boulevard where a man was wielding a machete. Here is Supervisor Ned Galloway of the Rio District.
The HARTS team was first on scene, and a gentleman was found to be in a mental health crisis, and eventually the police department had to come in to help resolve the situation. The fact that the situation was resolved and that man is receiving treatment is a specific commitment to an approach here in Albemarle County that I appreciate. It is not lost on me that this gentleman would have been shot and killed if in other jurisdictions in this country.
Galloway said the use of non-lethal methods to resolve the standoff is the preferable choice, and he thanked Police Chief Sean Reeves for working to implement the program. HART launched in July of 2023, and in its first 6 months responded to calls for 150 people. Albemarle's draft budget for fiscal year 2025 contains additional funds to allow the team to expand in size and capacity. Supervisor Mike Pruitt of the Scottsville District took the time to thank public safety officials for their assistance in dealing with a recent bomb threat at the Planet Fitness in Fifth Street Station.
It is one of the dozens across the country that appear to have been targeted in response to the fact that Planet Fitness as a gym, as a policy, does not ban trans women from locker rooms. So I view this specifically as an anti-LGBT terror effort.
Pruitt said a local ordinance is needed to allow the Commonwealth's attorney to seek damages related to a hate crime, which could repay the cost to respond to the bomb threat. He added he himself has received many death threats because he has spoken out about the issue, and he called upon people to not normalize hate. There is a lot of wealth in Albemarle County, but it is not distributed equally, especially as the cost of living increases. Mary McIntyre is the Rio District Representative on the Department of Social Services Advisory Board. She helped present an annual report to the Board of Supervisors on April 17th.
We do have 16,000 households that are identified as asset limited, income constrained, and employed. And this is important for us to remember that they are working, but they are yet not earning enough to support their families.
McIntyre presented that report, which has the theme Impacts, and McIntyre said that refers to the assistance that helps many people in the community get by.
When you look at the number of people in Albemarle County that receive some kind of services from the department, you probably do know someone who receives services from the Department of Social Services, whether you know it or not. And in fact, all of the people who come through DSS as clients impact you in some way. They are your neighbors, they are driving on the roads next to you, they are shopping in the stores with you, they are playing in the parks with your children.
One of the services is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which helps families, individuals, and households buy food. The number of recipients jumped nearly 44% over 5 years, from 9,664 in fiscal year 2019 to 13,668 in fiscal year 23.
We do have more people needing assistance in the community, and we are able to provide that in many various ways.
The number of referrals to Child Protective Services has also increased from 913 in fiscal year 19 to 1,228 in fiscal year 23. McIntyre said the department is currently able to handle the increased workload with existing staff, but more resources may be needed if the trend continues. One thing staff does is validate cases. There were 336 validated referrals in fiscal year 19 and 483 in fiscal year 23. Other services include assistance with energy issues, including home heating and purchase of fans or air conditioning. Much of that funding comes from a pass-through from the federal government, and it runs out each year. There's also work to help connect people with employment.
DSS helps people find and get living wage jobs. We provide job leads daily to people seeking jobs. In our Career Center, of the 846 people that visited the Career Center, 427 were first-time visitors.
A major barrier to people entering the workforce is a lack of child care. McIntyre said Albemarle does not have enough providers, which has driven up the cost. Albemarle has a subsidy program, but many daycare centers won't accept it. In the question and answer period, Supervisor Ned Galloway asked about a metric related to the care for elderly residents.
In the presentation, it was mentioned the 591 seniors receiving services to remain living independently. Do we think we're missing people?
Kaki Dimmick is Albemarle's Chief of Human Services, and she said it is very likely that there are people who aren't getting the services they need, in part because they may not know the services exist or that they're even eligible for them. Needs for elder care are nuanced, but the system may not be.
There are folks who are getting are in a setting in which they're getting more services than they need at the moment. The sort of ideal setting or continuum is that you get the services you need, not you don't go immediately from 1 to 10. Mm. But sometimes our system is not set up for that sort of nuanced, progressive sort of caregiving.
The presentation also covered housing issues, and I'll be following up on that in another edition of the newsletter. Just one more segment to go today. Albemarle County is 280 years old and will celebrate a tricentennial in 2044. That year is also what planners are targeting as work continues on an update of the comprehensive plan. One item on a long list of stories I want to step up coverage on is the update of this plan. That means going back in time to March 20th, 2024, when the Board of Supervisors held the first of two work sessions on the AC-44 process. That's the name for the Comprehensive Plan Update. Tori Kanellopoulos is a principal planner in the county's Department of Community Development.
There are 8 plan chapters, each of which have goals, objectives, and actions. Goals are where we want to go. Objectives are outcomes or targets to help us get there. And the actions are the steps to make the plan happen.
The comprehensive plan is being updated in a 5-phase process, and planners are at the end of phase 2, which is to create the new goals and objectives. Phase 3 will see the creation of the action steps, followed by prioritization, as well as the development of metrics intended to gauge progress. A big question that undergirds the whole discussion is whether Albemarle has enough room in its current development area to support anticipated population growth. The Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at the University of Virginia projects the number of people who live in Albemarle will increase from the 2023 estimate of 115,676 individuals to 124,016 in 2030, 138,523 in 2040, and 155,102 by 2050. Since 1980, the Comprehensive Plan has divided Albemarle into one of two land use categories. There's a development area of roughly 5% of the county's 726 square miles, and a rural area where county rules are strict about what can be built and what uses can occur.
Efficient use of development areas land is a topic we'll be asking for the board's direction on today. We also heard that for the rural area, we should explore opportunities for small-scale and community-serving uses and services, and opportunities for community resilience hubs.
Those hubs would be intended to be gathering and distribution points in case of a disaster. The county is also looking to review whether more uses should be allowed at the Shadwell and Yancey Mills interchanges on Interstate 64. Canelopolis said this would take the form of a small area plan. She also shared some of the current feedback on priorities for the rural area.
Many of these priorities are consistent with the current comprehensive plan, with an overall emphasis on protecting the natural environment and having usable land for agriculture and forestry in the rural area.
Canelopolis said about 45% of Albemarle residents live in the rural area. Should there be more services in some of those areas, like medical offices? As a way to head into that direction, there is a draft goal 4.
Albemarle County will proactively plan for unique locations in the rural area with established land use patterns, zoning, and existing development that are inconsistent with rural area goals, including locations where development has already occurred that does not conform with rural area goals, location with zoning other than rural area that are adjacent to the development areas and the rural interstate interchanges.
And implementation would primarily be done through future small area planning efforts for those areas.
One new objective would be to create a new rural area land use plan that would try to get a move away from this one-size-fits-all approach for those properties that's been in place since about 1980. Supervisor Diantha McKeel's Jack Jewett District is the least rural of the 6 political subdivisions in Albemarle. She said she supported small-scale commercial uses outside of the rural area and supported small area plans for areas designated as crossroad communities.
I am in favor of them in theory, but the devil's always in the details, right?
McKeel also noted that there has been initial feedback regarding adding bike and pedestrian facilities on rural roads.
I'm just not sure exactly how that would play out realistically with our limited financial resources. Realistically, we're struggling in the development area for transportation alternatives.
Canelopolis said improvements would not necessarily be large scale, but could involve wider shoulders or could be building specific trails. McKeel was also skeptical about large expansions of transit into the rural area, but suggested that is further work that the proposed Regional Transit Authority might undertake.
I mean, there is no way that we can afford to put a robust transit system in 726 square miles.
Supervisor Ned Galloway of the Rio District agreed with McKeel that spending money on multimodal transportation in the rural area was a non-starter.
We're not putting walking, biking, and transit infrastructure out in the rural area.
There's no way.
There's no way.
So I'm not going to be supportive of doing that.
Galloway also supported crossroad communities, but favored leaving up the direction for each of them to the people who live in those crossroad communities. He did support Albemarle's development of community resilience hubs in the rural areas.
I feel like we should somehow provide places for folks to go when power's out, especially during either extreme heat or extreme cold times. Whether or not those have to be in the Crossroad communities, I don't know, but they're definitely, this county has a responsibility to provide that.
One of the questions to supervisors was whether they would support allowing more uses in the rural area if they were controlled by a special use permit. Galloway said he would be open to the idea. Supervisor Ann Malik suggested there be very clear guidelines.
It depends, because a large fuel station and convenience center is different than an artisan furniture maker as far as its impact.
Malik said Earliesville may not be considered a crossroad community, but it is a village with more than just homes. But she said many businesses that may be desired by planners may not be viable.
Five churches, post office, doctor's office, which went out of business due to lack of interest. Two auto repair shops, a thrift store. Its grocery store went out of business when the bridge in Advance Mills was closed and all the Greene County people had to find another way. And then Harris Teeter opened at Hollymead, and that was the end of the grocery store.
Malik said people who live in the country do not expect to have many businesses close by, and the whole point of the comprehensive plan is to allocate Albemarle's resources to areas where there is infrastructure.
I would hope that our comprehensive plan would not be making promises about all sorts of different things that have very little chance of ever coming true.
Malik also suggested language that any community resiliency hubs would be in existing structures rather than in new buildings. Malik also had a suggestion that Albemarle consider creating an agricultural zoning district, something she said has not existed since 1980, when the county downzoned to reflect the comprehensive plan, creating the rural area zoning category that became a one-size-fits-all approach for the overwhelming majority of Albemarle's 726 square miles.
And what that meant was that then it became a residential, almost de facto, despite tremendous protests from people in the rural area that said the primary use should be agriculture and forestry, not ag and forestry and residential and little commercial uses or whatever.
Malik also warned about putting anything in the comprehensive plan that would take away resources from the development area, such as traffic calming efforts.
We have a terrible time accomplishing those things.
Supervisor Mike Pruitt of the Scottsville District said he liked the direction the comprehensive plan is heading with regard to the rural area.
I think it's important that we think of the rural area as a place with real texture, right? It is a place with a diversity of actual uses, a diversity of ways of living, and actual diverse economic activity that goes on there.
Pruitt said efforts to preserve land benefit private individuals more than the rest of the public. He said the comprehensive plan should focus on placemaking in the rural area to allow more people to enjoy it.
A place in the rural area, as someone who does not currently live in the rural area, that I frequently visit and enjoy is the Dick Woods Road, Miller School parking lot area. It is a very popular cross-country track.
To Pruitt, placemaking would involve making sure it is safe to access such areas. He also said he would support small-scale restaurants in crossroad communities to create spaces for people and their families to go. Pruitt also said the best way for landowners to make money off rural land now is through luxury housing, something he said should be discouraged by allowing pockets of smaller footprint structures.
Is there a way to legalize and make by right more affordable units and more affordable design types and patterns of living in the residential area?
Pruitt said he understands such a policy would have to be done in a way to discourage sprawl, and that the county should look and see what similar communities are doing across the country. I'll have more from this AC 44 process in the future as I go through various meetings from a couple months ago now. Also discussed at the March 20th meeting is land use and transportation in the development area. The community's facilities chapter was discussed on April 3rd, which includes the county's growth management policy. I'm often asked, what would you cover if you had more people? Albemarle's comprehensive plan and the details of it is what I would cover. So I really thank anybody who is contributing. And if you are a podcast listener and you'd like more of it, please do consider some sort of contribution through Substack, Patreon, or just tell some friends. And that's the end of this podcast version, which I'm calling Podcast 1. It does take more time to produce the podcast version of this program, but now that I've got a finished product, I feel I've completed this week's workload, and tomorrow, another set of stories will begin to be written. This is my dream job, creating something from scratch by using all of the skills that I've learned to date. The audio production is certainly one of them, and I'm not entirely certain how I managed to pull all of this off. One way I can do that is because of Substack and Patreon subscribers. I don't need to do any other work that isn't writing. People pay to keep me in digital ink, and I'm very glad to keep an eye out as much as I can. Thanks to Vracky and the Fundamental Grang for the music and interstitial weirdness that you hear in the program. There's going to be some more of that, I think, as I decide to just share and enjoy.
This music recording session brought to you by Borax.
Opening music comes from PJ Sykes. For now, the podcast will likely be back next Friday or Saturday as I continue figuring out a new way forward. Thanks again for your patience, and thanks for listening. If you did, please drop me a note. Let me know what you think. At one point, I'm going to get around to a survey of some sort, but for now, all I can think of is a Steve Vai. Stupid inside joke there. I probably should have let that one go. Thank you, and goodbye.